that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Wanna go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
And welcome to the Fourth Line Voice Podcast. My name is Darren. Thank you very much for tuning in. Episode 98 of the big show, some enforcer-based podcasting coming at you, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. How's everybody doing out there? Another wacky Wednesday. I have a really cool interview for you guys today. Zach Fitzgerald. It was a lot of fun talking to Zach. We went for a long time, over 3 hours of content, and over a couple days. I really want to thank Zach again for coming on the show. He and I had talked about it for a while, and so to finally make it happen was really cool, and I'm really excited to bring this to you guys. I broke it up in two parts. Like I said, it's a little lengthy, and I didn't want to kind of do it all in one shot, so broke it up, and part two will be out on Sunday. I'm sure with Zach being the guest, I have some new listeners tuning in. Thank you. Welcome. Thank you. I encourage you, please, to go back and check out my back catalog. McMorrow, Morasti, McIntyre, Tedarenko. For the UK listeners out there, Mike McWilliam. Sean McMorrow, as I said. Riley Emerson. Joe Grimaldi. That interview created quite the stir. And like I said, Jason Goulet, there's another one. Frank Kovacs. I mean, a few guys from overseas. So please, like I said, go back, check out the back catalog. I do two shows a week here. Wednesday is interview day, and then Sunday is my rant episodes, or shit show Sunday, as they're called, where, kind of look out the window and yell about the goings on of the week, or usually it's about something that bugged me on social media, hockey wise, or I find some old articles to talk about and that type of thing. So, I encourage you to check them out. I think you'll find a player interview or what have you that you'll enjoy. But, in the meantime, as I said, I'm sponsored by the Hockey Podcast Network. There's over 55 shows on the network. All the NHL teams are represented. So whatever team you're a fan of, there's a show for you. So check it out. Like I said, those guys are really busy with the season going on, and every week bringing out new content, especially with the trade deadline now. So they'll have a lot to talk about now. Myself, Terry Ryan, Brad Lieb, we're on the original content side. So lots of good stuff on the network. From my off-network friends, Joe Lazito over at the Coliseum Chronicles. He's a New York Islander enforcer-based podcast. He's had Mick Fakota on, Aaron Asham, Jason Strudwig. Right now he's in the middle of a Trevor Gillies kind of I think they're on part five coming up here. And it's been a great interview. Trevor really You know, obviously five episodes, you're getting down to the nitty gritty, but they talk about all his teammates and opponents, and he really breaks down the role and how he approached it. And it's been a really cool interview. And if you're a fight fan and all that, definitely check it out. And Joe's so knowledgeable. He's been around and him and Trevor are friends, right? So, I mean, you have that personal connection. So the interview, it's really solid, and I'm really enjoying it. I'm looking forward to part five. Also, the Obey the Puck show with Dan, Paul, and Kelly, and the Slewfoot show with Fred and Dave, a couple current shows. They always keep it up with the goings-on in the league. They'll have a lot to talk about in these new episodes. They talk about the NHL and then the minors and women's hockey and really stay on top of things. And I always thank them because I always say they keep me informed and I don't have to watch. So, but I'm plugged in, as the kids would say. I have my finger on the pulse, so I can keep up with what's going on without having to watch. I enjoy it. But guys, like I said, I'm not going to go on too long for the intro here. We'll get right into the interview with Zach Fitzgerald. But please check out also my Fourth Line Voice on Twitter as well as on Facebook. So send me a friend's request or a follow or what have you, or just drop me a line. Tell me what you thought of the episode, and I'd love to hear from you. Also, Fourth Line Voice on YouTube. Check out my YouTube channel. Got some of Zach's fights from Junior. Really great one with Paul Brown. We talked about it in the interview. Check that fight out. Yeesh. Yeah, check. Definitely. But a couple good Zach tilts on there. But over 2,500 fights from Junior to Pro, any league you're looking for. Just type it in the search engine, WHL, OHL, NHL, whatever. Boom, 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 it's there. So I highly encourage you to check that out as well. But other than that, please rate. I'm asking a lot from you folks. Sorry, but if you could rate, review my show, it helps me out in the searches. And other than that, let's get at it. Here's my conversation with Zach Fitzgerald. Thanks, guys. All right, here on the Fourth Line Voice, guest today out in Toronto right now is Zach Fitzgerald. Zach, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Darren. Thanks for having me, man. Out in Toronto, kind of not expected, I guess.
No, it wasn't. I thought you'd be back home in Minnesota.
I'd love to be. I would absolutely love to be in Minnesota, but this whole world is kind of in shambles.
Yeah, we're kind of, everybody's sort of in a holding pattern right now, that's for sure. Well, you had a long and storied career, and from the Western Hockey League to the American League to overseas, and we're going to cover all that with timeline your career. But obviously you got to start at the beginning. Where were you born and raised, and when did you start playing your minor hockey?
Well, I was born in Two Harbors, Minnesota, which is about a half hour, 45 minutes up the road from Duluth, Minnesota, where I grew up. Really, moved down there when I was five, and watched my brother. We traveled around, watched my brother play. So that's kind of how I got into hockey. But it was just the way in Minnesota. Really, we had the outdoor rinks, and I usually kind of compare it to the babysitter. Mom used to bring you there and drop you off, and you'd be screwing around for 7-8 hours. And sometimes she worked in the warming shack, and you got the free hot chocolate. And otherwise, that's just kind of what we did. We grew up there, and on the outdoor rink in northern Minnesota.
No, absolutely. And you mentioned your brother, of course, Rusty, played in the NHL, the Pittsburgh Penguins, and played pro for a while. I noticed there's actually a fairly significant age difference between the two of you. Were you, did you get to spend some time around, like, the Penguins and stuff, like Mario and Yager and all those guys?
I wish, man. No, it was, 13-year gap. So yeah, it was quite a big one. Actually, to start that off, it was when we were up in Two Harbors, we were on our way down to the hockey tournament. Well, I wasn't quite me yet; I was in Mama's belly, and we were on our way down to the hockey tournament. And Mom said, "Hey, it's happening now." And Dad just dropped Mama off, and I was born. And on the way back from the tournament, and picked us up. And I think 3 days later, we were back in the rink watching games. But Rusty was my definitely my. My first hero, and following him, I would think it was in fifth or sixth grade when I'm when he was playing for the Penguins, and I'm just walking around with the Penguins jersey, just, you know, full of pride. And I think I probably wore it every single day, you know. And, you know, we didn't get to go. I think my parents maybe went, but we didn't get to go much because he was, well, the life of a pro hockey player is quite, things happen quick. And I think he was up and down, and it just didn't quite work out to get there for a game. He had a lot of injuries. But no, I didn't get to spend time with those guys. I have a couple like autograph sticks. But I did get to experience some cool things. Like when he played for the Moose, a couple guys were there. I got to go in the locker room and get on the ice with those guys. And, no, but he had a great career. Well, I wouldn't say it was long enough for him. He was injury, stricken and basically had to shut her down for a while. But, you know, he got to play his rookie year with, like you say, the Augers and Lemieux, and his rookie party picture. He's got his arm around both those guys. What an experience he must have had.
No, absolutely. And it's interesting. Like, I was just kind of thinking as you're talking about it, you know, you're still young enough. I mean, so you're still taking the steps. Like, you haven't even, like, with the junior and all that yet. Seeing your older brother in the NHL and playing pro and all that, like I've talked to some guys on this show, and like when you're in a small town in Saskatchewan or Manitoba or whatever, the NHL seems a million miles away, right? And it's not attainable, and because you don't know anybody that's in it, and you're just the guys on TV. Well, right. With you, your older brother is in the NHL. So did you even have any like, oh, I could do that too? Or like, you had to have maybe a different mindset than other people did.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny that you say it like that, because I don't think I ever really thought about it that way. I think, and maybe it was ignorance is bliss or whatever, but because the age gap was so different, he was doing his own thing. Like when I was screwing around in fifth, sixth grade, he was in, before that, he was in university, and he had all the college guys over at the house, and they were doing their own thing. And to be honest, the UMD Bulldogs were the legends to me. You know, we would go to the games, we'd get the ice cream, we'd be watching the UMD Bulldogs, and now everybody knows about the UMD Bulldogs because they're champs. But, you know, he played there with like Derek Plant and some other guys that went on to pro. But he was that's where he was the big dog. And then when he went to the Penguins, I don't know if it was, once again, just ignorance, but it was just like, okay, you know, we play hockey around here. This is my brother that, you know, he's just doing it, and we watched it. We were so excited, and it just felt, I don't know if it just felt normal, but for me growing up, and I always kind of say it to people, you know, I always had the dreams and the ambitions that, yeah, I wanted to play in the NHL, and I had the hockey cards, and I watched hockey, and I did everything just like every other little kid, waited for the broken sticks, autographs, all that good stuff. But for me, I was just, I don't think I ever really thought I'm gonna be there. I just kind of went with it, and then, you know, Major Junior came knocking, and that was just a whole nother. I never even thought about that.
That was gonna be my next question. I mean, your brother was a college guy, and you know, so Junior A stuff like that down there, like USHL, all that. And then how did you end up in the Western Hockey League of all things?
Well, it was if I'm remembering correctly. So we used to come. So being in Duluth, it was, you know, 3.5 hours from Thunder Bay, and then 7-8 hours from Winnipeg. And we used to go up there and play tournaments. And, you know, you go up to Thunder Bay, and the guys were fucking 6'5". They had beards at 12, 13 years old. And you're like, Jesus Christ, what's going on here, you know? Yeah. And then we went up to Winnipeg, and we went up to Stonewall. And I don't know, I guess, like, the name, it was absolute nails out there. The guys were running around. They were absolutely obliterating my teammates, just, you know, hitting guys. And these guys were, you know, good hockey players, and you're in Canada, you're like, it's Canada's game, and blah, 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 you know. And I was kind of the only one that was standing up to these guys, you know. I was hitting them back and getting riled up and standing up for my teammates and blah, blah, blah. And it was a young age. I think we were, had to have been 13 or 14 or so. But that's where somebody from the Calgary Hitmen saw me. And they approached my old man, and that's where I started looking at the web page. I was sitting in high school looking at him like, Jesus Christ, you know, these guys are, you know, draft picks. You got first round draft picks in the NHL, and it was quite intimidating, really, you know. But the way that I played the game, and I played 1 year of high school, but the way that I played, physical and, you know, just more of a hard-nosed game opposed to a finesse or speed game, it just made sense to explore Major Junior when it really came down to it, and the agents were coming around and they were, you know, they're giving you their ideas and your two cents, and it's the fast track, and oh, you're going to make it to the NHL. And at that point, I think, you know, touching back with Rusty, I think at that point is when I realized, okay, you know, this could actually be something real. You know, I think, I can't remember his name now, and I feel terrible, but one of my brother's teammates at university was one that kind of tipped me on to Octagon Hockey, and that's where they, my agency, that's where they started picking up on me, and that's kind of where all this snowballs. But yeah, it was playing, I think it was initially playing a game in Stonewall, and the interest came in Calgary, and Calgary thought Calgary, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Seattle came and drafted me, and they flew me out there, and it was just kind of sold from there.
Yeah, well, I mean, and then so you make the Seattle Thunderbirds at 16, and well, like you said, were you like you said you were standing up for your teammates and stuff like that, and did you sort of well, I mean, especially at that time, you know, early 2000s, I mean, you know, were you ready for the Western Hockey League in terms of fighting and everything else? Did you do any training for that, or it's just let's go down there and give her shit and see what happens?
Well, I mean, at that time it was crazy, because I went and tried out for the national team development program, and I actually ended up like signing a contract to go there, and so we're all set in our ways, and then, you know, they're doing the locker boxing there, and you know, it was you start hearing stories, and actually a kid from my hometown had gone out there and said it was quite militant, and I was like, okay, well, I mean, I love the military, but I don't know if I'm into that, and it was all that. So then we went out to Seattle, and they kind of wined and dined us. They showed us around, and Seattle's a crazy city, and just from being from Duluth, I was like, wow, this is amazing, you know. But we get out there, and I'm just this kid that let's put it this way. When you got all those like tournament photos of the kids, and they got their shooting it and they're scoring a goal, it's gone bar down, they're celebrating, and that's their picture, the big smile on their face. My pictures were me standing over a kid, just absolutely just crushed a kid that was probably half my size and didn't want to be hitting, you know, that was like my highlight photo. So when I got out to Seattle, you know, I'm trying to run around and crush guys. And basically, guys, and I'm sure you'll bring up their names, but guys like Darren McLaughlin were like, hey, you know, if you're going to play that way, you're basically going to have to, you're going to have to stand up for yourself, and you're going to have to learn how to do this. And you know, we see the way you play and think you can do this, you know, and they kind of took me under the wing and you know, taught me a little bit of the ways. And when you're 16, like, who really knows how much this stuff is going in your brain? But, you know, I go, okay, well, now I'm getting all riled up, you know, I'm fired up. I got to fight somebody. Okay, I'm playing physical. This is going to be my new role. I got to fight somebody. I just got to fight somebody. So I'm out in the training camp and skating around, and I choose my target. And this kid was a fucking finesse player. Like, he did, you know, he wasn't, maybe he hit a few guys, and maybe that's what sparked my interest, but I'm chasing after this guy. Hey, we're going, we're fighting. No, we're not fighting. We're going. We're absolutely going. No, we're not. And basically, by the end of the game, I had forced him into a fight, grabbed him, like, I must have throttled him or something, like, popped his eye, you know. And in training camp, everybody's eating together and blah, blah, blah. So after, we're sitting there, and I look over, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, you know, I must have got a lucky punch and popped him in there. But the guy didn't want to fight, and I went over and chatted with him and, you know, sorted it out. But that was kind of my first real experience into it. And then, you know, you learn the ways that that's not the way to do it. But I always felt the need to stand up for friends and teammates on and off the ice. So it just kind of came natural, I guess, for the protection mode. And it was, you know, then at that point, once again, they start talking about elements that are going to, you know, elevate you above other players. And in all honesty, that was one that helped me along the way.
No, well, absolutely. And, well, your first year there, I mean, you guys had a rough year, finished in last, but your coach is Dean Chenault. So right away, it's no doubt that he would have toughness on the team. And I mean, you got yourself, Greg Black, Robin Gomez, Spiller, McLaughlin. I mean, you guys might not have won a lot of games, but I mean, you won a lot of fights anyway. I mean, well, first of all, what was Chenault like?
Dean was a great coach. I had a lot of respect for him. He was really good to me. I actually just spoke to him a few months ago, and I'm so proud of where he's at. And he's always been a good connection for me. We didn't talk for a long time, but you know, he brought me into some stories about how when he was talking to my old man back in the day. But he was a good coach. I really liked him. He was helpful. Yeah, you're right. We had some major toughness, and when we used to play against Portland, oh my God, that was absolute.
Yeah.
Melee, there's videos of Greg Black out there. Just, oh boy. But yeah, no, he was a good coach. I got a lot of respect for that guy.
No, absolutely. And, I was just laughing, looking at your thing, like it's yourself and Black and these guys. Then you trade for Robin Gomez, which kind of just cracks me up. Like you needed more, right?
People
listen. I mean, they'll have heard the name. He bounced around the East Coast League for a little while, but he was a tough dude, Robin Gomez.
And some of the fans in the UK might remember him. He went over to the UK for a little bit, just for a little while, but he popped over there. But
that's, man, right. Yes,
he was tough as nails, and he didn't like me at first. I'll tell you what, because I was just this little annoying guy, like not. Don't get me wrong, annoying, but I would be like having fun. I like to have fun and sing and whatever and goof around. He'd be like, you know what, Rook. You got a lot to learn, you got a lot to learn. Yeah, and if you called him Goober, he would not be happy, I'll tell you what.
How about McLaughlin?
Big Mac, he was, that guy was tough. He was probably the toughest guy in the league for a while. He unfortunately had some injuries towards the end of his career, but he was good to me. He was, like I mentioned before, he was, he kind of took me under his wing in the fighting aspect of things. But he was the veteran on the team. You know, everybody had looked up to him. Everybody respected him. But, you know, it's unfortunate because he signed pro. It's unfortunate that his injuries kind of took that away.
No, absolutely. And, well, like you said, you know, your first year, you get 14 tilts. I was just kind of going through your fight card. There's a few names on there that I want to ask you about, and one of them, of course, is and the folks, the minor league fans will remember this guy, and you fought him a couple times, Robin Big Snake.
Oh yeah, yeah. He. We didn't like each other. He was one of the guys I just didn't like. I absolutely would go out of my way to hit that guy. I would try to fight him every opportunity I could. And not to say that he couldn't stand his own. He was a tough guy, and he would handle his own, and he would run around too. But God, he was one of the guys that I just did not like and would jump on every opportunity I could with him.
Well, another guy that I'm sure many have said was annoying was Tutu. You fought Jordan Tutu as well.
Yeah, but that was like one of my like trophy fights. You know, like when you're a kid and you're like, oh, you fought Tutu. Oh my God, he fought Tutu. Wow, that's amazing. And you know, he was a bull. He is an absolute bull. A lot of respect for that guy. I like what he's doing now with his, you know, with what he's doing with his life and his platform. And he's a good leader in that aspect, but. Great career for him, and definitely one of my my younger trophy fights.
Well, one guy I got to ask you about, because I know you fought him a few times, and one of your fights with him, I always tell everybody, is probably one of the best junior fights I ever saw, and how either of you were standing after. I know he caught you with a good one. How you didn't go down is beyond me either, but Paul Brown.
Oh yeah, yeah. I knew who you were talking about right when you mentioned that. He was nail guns. He would chuck him. He would stand there and chuck him. Like it was not. Yeah, I was young and dumb and not too. I mean, I always kind of fought the same way, but real dumb then, where I just literally almost like asking him to punch me in the face, you know. But yeah, you're right. That fight circulates every now and then. But he was, yeah, he was nails. We had a lot of fights. And cool story about him, a couple of years later when we were down at the draft in Nashville, we I hadn't seen him all day, but later on that day, he was picked by Nashville. If I'm right yep. or wrong, I
yep. could be you're wrong. Right. Yeah, you're right.
Nashville. So we were out, and you know, 18-year-old kids out on the town in Nashville. And it's funny because it was Patrick O'Sullivan's out there standing on the corner with a stack of IDs. I think I still have the Ontario ID that I had back in the day. But you know, there's a Nashville. You got however many 18-year-olds running around the city, and you'd think we would be getting caught doing this, but. You know, we were all having fun, and I ran into Brownie, and we sat and had some shots and bullshit for a while, and that was one of the highlights of it, because I didn't know a ton of guys down there, but you know, we chatted for a while, and that was something I'll always remember for sure.
Yeah, it's a shame that kind of the injuries got him too. He was a hell of a player.
He was, he was one of those guys that definitely would, you know, have a really good shot at pro, where you can rely on him, you can play the game, and he's tough as nails.
Yeah. Well, you had kind of mentioned the rivalries that you guys had with, like, you know, that whole, you know, the Tri-City and Portland oh, yeah. and Spokane and that whole deal, the U.S. division in general. But one of the cats, I just had him on the show recently, tough dude, played in Spokane at the time. I know you fought him, Jordan Clark.
Oh, yeah. Clark. I don't remember how old he would have been when I fought him, but... No, I hope he's doing well. How is he doing?
He's good, yeah, man. It was a lot of fun talking to him, and one of those kind of, I wish people would see more of him, because played junior and then obviously never went on to pro. He went on and got a job and got on with life, but yeah, he was, you go back and through his fight card and that footage, he was a bad dude, boy. He fought everybody, that guy. Yeah. Yeah, well, I was thinking when you in Spokane, when you fought him, he would have been 18 or 19 at the time. Yeah, because he had played in PA before that. So, yeah.
Right. Okay, right.
Yeah. But, yeah, tough dude. Well, so you get kind of get, you know, you get your feet wet there your first year. You got, some older guys to kind of show you the way. But like you said, you got into all 61 games and 214 minutes as a 16-year-old, and so the following year you kind of roll into town. It was kind of weird how your Seattle career went. It was like last place first place. It was kind of, because then the next year you come in and you guys finish in first.
Yeah, that was my draft year, so I was quite fortunate to be on that team. We had a good team. We should have actually made it further in playoffs, in my opinion, but we had a really good year. That was a lot of fun, and I was fortunate for it to be my draft year, because they had a ton of scouts coming around, and when you're winning, people are watching.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely, and... Yeah, well, again, you know, 17 tilts and first of all, I was asked by somebody, my boy Chris out there listening, when you went into camp, he wanted me to ask you, do you remember Bubba Westwood?
Oh, yeah, Bubba. I love Bubba. What a beauty. I love Bubba. Oh, man. Buddy, he is a good dude. He's a good kid. I hope he's well, and I hope he hears that. I say hello.
Yeah, I was, because I know he played a couple games with you guys and then, spent, the next couple years there in the BC League with Quinnell, putting up sick penalty, 400 penalty minutes and stuff. Dude.
He was nails. He was nails.
Yep.
I'll just remember him hugging that 20 pack of beer wherever we were. I'll just always remember that. Even though we shouldn't have been, he was.
Well, there you go, Bubba Westwood. There you go. Yeah, I should try to get Bubba on the show. Is what I should try to do.
Bubba, he should.
Yeah. well, one of the fights again. Another former guest. He ended up being a teammate the following year. But Huxley.
Hux. First thing he said, Fitz. Remember when I busted your nose? yeah, I do, Hux. Okay. Yeah, no, he was, you know what, man, he, so tough, so technical and fearless. Like, he would pick people apart with his fighting, and I'm not surprised he busted my nose and, sat in a dinner after in Spokane with family and whatever with the bandages across my nose and things stuffed up my nose, because you know what, he was accurate. He would tag guys and switch left, right. I've talked to him a few times here and there. He's still doing well. He's still connected in the game. And but yeah, no, he boy, he was tough. And you know, I ran him a few times in the PHPA later on in our careers and stuff. But I hope he's doing good too.
Cause, yeah, he kind of had that duck under thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. That was, yeah, guys couldn't handle that. And then he would just tag it, and his quick little punches, not the big, you know, like a lot of us did when we were younger, where the big, like, you reach back and throw over your head, you know, it's like a boxer, straight from the shoulder, where like it should be.
Yeah, did you, I've noticed kind of like as you were going on, like you said, you had kind of had that wild, just swinging, you know, you hit, you know, take as much as you get, you know, or, you know, yeah, give as good as you get. And yeah, did you, like when Huxley was there, the fall, did you guys, I'm assuming you guys worked on stuff, or did you bother?
Yeah, we definitely worked on stuff. He was definitely trying to get in every scrap he could. But yeah, we worked on stuff. And yeah, I think over time, I just, you know, you realize that you can't wind up, nor is it doing anything. Like, at first you think you're keeping his arm off your jersey or whatever, but regardless, he's going to grab you. It's just a matter of getting the right lanes, not reaching back like that.
Did you ever take any boxing or MMA or anything at all?
Yeah, I mean, I would do it in the summer mostly for conditioning with the MMA stuff, but it also translated very well more than boxing to hockey fighting, because you're grappling, you're pulling, you're not throwing punches necessarily in the training, but the grappling and the pulling and the balance. And I mean, those workouts were terrorizing. I used to do boxing a little bit too, but the MMA or the Muay Thai was more or less the choice from our trainer in the summers.
Did you, I know some talking to guys from doing this show, were you a video guy? Like, did you watch a lot of video on guys, or did you just sort of, because I was just, well, I guess not at this time, maybe on, well, as you went on in pro, I mean, I was going to say,
yeah,
YouTube was around then, but were you a drop your gloves, go to that website and watch video, were you one of those guys?
Yeah, I definitely later on when it was kind of, when somebody brought the point to me, yeah, I definitely would. Because, I mean, we'd all look at those stat packs, and you knew exactly who the other guys were, and you'd see the stat packs, and, you know, have all the PIMs and all that stuff in there. But if you knew who you were going up against, or maybe didn't know the guy, yeah, I would definitely catch a video. I would want to have a little idea of maybe what he would do, if he's going to switch, or if he started left, or whatever. But at the end of the day... and you know, hindsight's 20/20 in every single one of my fights. But when I went into fights, I might have had a plan a few times, but it was never executed. It was just all feel and, you know, what you are used to doing. And, you know, if you get caught or tagged, you always knew, you know, kind of how to respond to that. So it was just, yeah, I watched them, and it was probably the worst idea to do, because you start thinking about the shit and you're laying there at night. And, you know, there's some nights where, they were long nights for sure. I'm not going to sit there and act like I didn't have long nights. Thinking about what was going to happen, because you just don't know. I mean, I don't think a lot of people really sit and think about it, that it's bare knuckle fights, and yeah, it's on skates and it's not as solid as ground. But if guys are good enough fighters and they get in and dig in there, you could get seriously hurt. But that's the risk you're willing to take. You know, and it's usually for the right reasons. You know, that's just how it was, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I've often said this, it's amazing, especially like if there's like a big KO that happens in the NHL or something like that, or if it's an American League fight that, you know, makes the rounds of a guy getting knocked out, and all of a sudden everybody acts horrified. And it's what do you think's been going on this whole time? Like, all of a sudden it becomes real to people all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's like a desensitized, I guess, we are to it. I don't know.
Oh, for sure. I would agree with that, yeah. But also, too, you know, you are willing to take that risk. And, yeah, you want to win these fights and you want to come out on top or whatever, but you don't want to seriously damage somebody. You don't want to, at the time, you know, you're trying to win the fight. And what does that include? It includes hurting somebody, right?
Yeah. But
you know, if you knock somebody out cold, like the first thing most of these guys do is go check on the player to see if he's all right. Sometimes you turn around and the adrenaline's just going and you have no idea. You can't even control yourself. You know, a lot of the times that's happened many times. But yeah, I think you're right. I think sometimes when you see the worst of the worst, that's when we really realize, and that's where you see a lot of the chatter online. But otherwise, I think people enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, definitely. Well, I was going to say when Huxley busted your nose, was that the same year when you're wearing like the full bubble and you get into that line brawl with Kelowna? Was that after that?
I can't remember specifically.
I remember your helmet. You had a full bubble and your helmet eventually comes off and you like dummy three guys. I remember that.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, I was known for what I was known for, right? And then, you know, I'm playing a game and things get riled up and I'm doing everything I possibly can to stay controlled and not get to that point. But if basically, you know, you get to the point where maybe it's a mistake in my point. Maybe it's being too honest, but I was to the point where I was like, look, I will rip my fucking helmet off here to show you that I'm not scared. I'm not going to be, you know, a cheap ass and go in here with a bucket on. And, you know, I'll take that risk. But that's being young and dumb. But, you know, I guess, you know, I actually ended up having to do it just a couple of years ago, too, with that Gagnon in the UK there. He was going after a couple of young kids, and I had to fly in there with a bubble. You know, like,
we'll get there.
I don't know what he expected. Yeah, you know, anyway.
Yeah, hold on. Preview.
Precursor.
Yeah, we'll get there. Well, this year, yeah, like you said, this is your draft year. So, you get drafted by the St. Louis Blues in the third round, 88th overall. Yeah, man, what was that like? What's the draft day like? And to hear your name called, what was that feeling like?
Oh, it was, you know what? It was a lot of emotions. Initially, you just don't, leading up to it for the year, you're getting, there's rankings and there's, you know, where you're going to go, and you're putting all this pressure on yourself, and some guys don't, and, you know, I try not to think about any of that, but, you know, it's prevalent in your agent's talking, and he's mentioning, oh, you know, if you go on this round, we'll bring you down. So anyway, it was a high enough chance of me going in one of the first four rounds where you actually go down there and you're in the stadium and, you know, you don't go on stage after the first round, but you meet everybody and do interviews and blah, blah, blah. But we were sitting there and my grandparents were fortunate enough to be down there, which was very special because they weren't able to really get out and see a lot of games and my parents weren't able to be there. So it was great to have them. And we were sitting there and, you know, you're watching the first round and there was I never thought I would ever go in the first round. Okay. But you're sitting there and you're watching and it takes forever, right? It takes forever. The first round, you're like, fucking 2-3 hours later, Jesus, man, like this, what's going on here? And now you're kind of getting sweating a little bit. And then the second round comes and you're just like praying. Can somebody pick me? You know, like somebody pick me. Okay. Third round. Oh my God. Now I don't even know if I want to be picked anymore. I don't even know if I want to be picked anymore. And then, eventually got to the point where, you know, they say your name and it's quite surreal. At that point, it was like the big hug and kiss to grandma and grandpa and went down and shook everybody's hand. Don't remember any faces, just a huge blur. Into some interviews after and then a little bit of a drafty party with St. Louis and met, you know, Quinville and a lot of the a lot of the management and guys over there. So that was a good experience. And Sean Bell actually was there, you know, one of the big D men from the WHL. He was out there. So it was good to have a familiar face, with St. Louis there. And it was a great experience. You know, it was, a blur, but I kind of touched on it after that. You know, you get picked and you go meet everybody out and have a good time. And, It was quite an experience, especially getting back to town with all my buddies.
Oh yeah,
you know, in Duluth and wearing the jersey and that was a special thing.
Did you interview with any other teams beforehand? And did you get any interesting interview stories?
I don't have any real interesting ones. Other than, I mean, I was interviewed by a few, but at the time. Like, cannabis was quite, wasn't as normalized as it is now. And they would ask, well, what would you do if your teammate was smoking cannabis? Or what would you do if your teammate was drinking? And just, you know, you try to answer the best way you can in the way that you believe is right, or that you think you would do. But, you know, you're sitting in a room with like a boardroom, and you're sitting at the end of the table with legitimate suits in there that are any former NHL players and GMs. And it's intimidating for younger men. And, you know, you just try to keep yourself composed. And, but yeah, I never even really thought St. Louis, I didn't interview with St. Louis, so I didn't think they would pick me.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So the following year, the next year you went to the Traverse City tournament, correct?
Yeah. Yep. We went to Traverse City. That was a good experience. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, was Boogie there that year? Boogard?
No. He wasn't there. No, the big man wasn't there. I used to skate with him in the summer, though. He was an absolute gem. Gentleman. And just bigger than life. Quiet guy.
Yeah.
But gentleman.
So after the Traverse, did you go to Blues Camp at all, or did you just go back to junior after Traverse City?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to go to main camp for both my camps there, and that one was really cool. That one was, Pronger was there, and you know, a lot of big names. That was a big eye opener for me. And now I feel terrible. I forget the name. I'm so bad with names. But this one of the veteran D. I'd have to look through it because I didn't even know his name going in, but he was such a gentleman and welcoming to me, whereas I felt like the majority of the other guys, unfortunately, weren't. It was an intimidating scene with St. Louis, which the reason I say that is because later on when I get traded to Vancouver, as soon as I walked in that locker room, guys like Kevin Bieksa were like, "Hey, Fitz, what's going on? Welcome, what's going on?" I'm just like, wow, this is polar opposite of what I've, you know, gone through with St. Louis. So, yeah, the main camps were good, but I was just so young. I knew I was going back to junior, and it was just kind of a blur. You know, you're just doing your best to survive through that, really, at that time. You don't think you're not really being talked to like you're going to make the roster. So, you know, you're just getting the experience.
Yeah, just kind of look at like that 02-03. Well, I guess it would have been like 03-04, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, so you got to Chuck there, Doug Waite and Pronger and Mellenby and Danton and Jackman and all them.
Yeah, the Danton story was quite big then too.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up. That's a little out there, that one. Did you have any interactions with him at all?
Well, sorry, I just missed you there for a sec.
Did you have any interactions with Danton at all?
Not really, no. Not really. But, like, he was getting chirped. And, I think Yablonsky was there trying to fight him just nonstop.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say that had to be pretty, like, Reed Lowe, Yablonsky, yeah. Steve McLaren was there, too.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it's amazing that you're bringing up all these names. I almost forget how, because you're so young, you're just like ignorant of how many legends you're surrounded with.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it may, you know, I'm not speaking for everybody, but at the time, I just, you know, didn't realize how many legends I was literally surrounded by.
Yeah. Well, when you go back to Seattle, was it sort of like, well, you've been drafted and everything. Do you feel you have more pressure on you or less going into that year?
Oh, that's a good question. I think you are a little bit, you're more confident for sure. I was definitely more confident. I think I realized too that it was, okay, now it's time to like earn a contract. So yeah, I would say more pressure. It's more real. You're wearing logos. You got St. Louis Blues stuff. You know, you got all these people in the league talking about you because you've been drafted, and so that's definitely became more real. You're getting your agent pressure to come down and move away from home to train with the pros, and so it was definitely more pressure, but I enjoyed that.
Yeah, well, and like you said, Huxley's there this year. He shows up, he gets traded to him, and from Saskatoon.
one of the tilts he had was, and this guy, I always find that not a lot of people talk about this guy. He's really kind of goes under the radar, and he shouldn't, because he's a bad dude. It was DJ King.
Oh, God. I twist my ankle trying to fight him because he was just so strong. I was twisting so hard to fight him. But, yeah, he was nails. I'm surprised he doesn't get talked about more. And, you know, even his NHL career, he was fighting everybody. But heck of a guy off the ice, too. I got to know him a little bit. I went and trained with him in the summer in Worcester. They would bring the young prospects out there. But, yeah, he was a good dude. And you're right. He just had such a long reach. There wasn't much you could do. And with him being so strong, it just you're already in trouble right away.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Just kind of going on here. Like, so you have the year. Were you happy with that season? I mean, I know the team itself. I mean, you guys kind of again, a rough year. I mean, you finished last. Out of the playoffs, on a personal level, like, what did you think of that season overall, your first season as a St. Louis Blue draft pick?
Well, I definitely had more responsibility on the team, you know, and I think I even gotten a letter at that point. So it was definitely more weighing when you can't, especially after the year before where you go so far in playoffs and, you know, you're bought into the program. The coaches were coming around the summer and trying to prep us for a big year and, you know, to let things down. I think that's when Everett came in too. Was that the year Everett came in? Everett, I think Everett came in that season and they ended up being a huge rival, which was good. It was good for how close the games were, but they put a fork in us too there. But yeah, no, the U.S. division was all 4 years I was there, it was good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, we're playing against Carey Price, you know, we got, you know, a lot of names, you know, Braden Coburn's, guys that are still in the NHL.
No, absolutely. Well, that next year, the 2004-05, I mean, that's when the strike happens and all that. Was there a strike right from the word go, or did you go to camp at all? Were you in Blues camp?
Yeah, we went to camp that year, and then, went on strike, and then, like, Turner Stevenson was coming hanging around us, which he was an absolute legend of a guy out in Seattle, but, yeah, he was coming around hanging out with us, and we had some NHL guys coming through, so there was, agents were, it was a lot more flooded because of the lockout. You had agents everywhere, you had scouts everywhere, so there was eyes everywhere.
Yeah. Well, and then this year, you go into it with a new coach in Sumner. Rob Sumner. Yeah. Did you get along with him?
Yeah, well, Sums and I, he was my D coach, and, like, we always got along. You know, it's quite hard. I mean, I kind of experienced a little bit last year from not quite the same thing being a player to a coach, but from assistant coach to head coach, you got to all of a sudden, and it's very similar to pro there where the head coach is kind of the hard ass. He's, you know, he's making sure things run in the way, and assistant coach is doing his thing, and he's more in tune with the players.
It's good cop, bad cop, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, he's got to go into that position where he's head coach, and, yeah, we kind of tanked and let him down. And he was coming around that summer, like I said, coming around, going to see guys, and our leadership group was good. We had a good leadership group. We just kind of, you know, and that's tough for a new coach. We had a lot of I can remember that year. We had a lot of mottos and a lot of meetings, and it just didn't work for us.
So you're kind of your final year there, and then were you getting any feedback from the Blues? Like, well, I'm sure they were giving you feedback, but what was the feedback? I guess, were they happy with the way you were playing? And
I think it was more, I mean, that was more or less getting filtered through my agent, so I don't know exactly, you know, I can't remember specifically, but it was always just like, it was more or less like, keep doing what you're doing, you know, they try to take the pressure away from you, like they always used to say, like, oh, don't worry about paying your bills, we'll pay those bills, so you just worry about hockey, you know, it's like, all right, okay. You forgot to mention that 4% there, but you know, it's, but no, it's, yeah, they try to filter out all the good and keep it going, but every single time a freaking agent would come watch me, I would get kicked out of the game within 5 minutes and be sitting with him. He's just like, I don't know why I waste my fucking time to come see you, man. I don't know why I waste my time to come see you.
Well, before we get out of Junior, a couple names I got to ask you about. I know you rumbled him a couple times. I was always a fan of this guy, Miles Staes.
Oh, another one. You're picking up all the guys I didn't like, and I probably would like him off the ice. I think I even follow him on Instagram now because I'm past that point where I actually dislike the guy. But the only reason I say I didn't like him is because there's one time, and I always remember, because the ones that really wronged me, I never forgot. But I was trying to fight this guy during the game. He was running around, and I knew he was tough, and it always pissed me off when the guys that were tough never wanted to stand up for what they were doing. So we're going in the game, and the game's going, and I think we ran each other at the bench, and I got one leg over the bench, and he finally grabs me and starts throwing punches, and I got one leg over the bench, and I'd accepted and got into the fight, but it always pissed me off that he got that jump on me. Absolutely pissed me off. And I won't get too detailed with it, but I finally got him back later on in pro when he was playing in Lowell. It was kind of a little bit of a melee, and Brad Haroff was my teammate, and he was super tough too. And I think he grabbed Brad and like suckered him or something, and I skated right over, and I had no regret just chucking one, right? Like, I don't even know if he's looking at me, but I just, like, it was like, for me, it was like, hey, finally, and I got it over with, and, you know, do I feel good about it? No, I don't feel good about it, but that guy, I was one of those ones where I didn't know if I would ever be able to settle that score, and I did, and oh well, it is what it is.
Another name, Matt Cassian.
Oh boy, God, he was, yeah.
That's a large human.
Yeah, a large human. He gave it to me. It was a good fight, but he definitely tagged me with a few in that fight in Vancouver. I'll remember that. I think I still remember, like, it was so dark in there all the time, but I remember that. And he went on to have a great, well, good career. It's a tough job, man. It's a tough gig.
Yeah.
I'm proud that he did so well too.
Yeah. Well, one last name I got to ask you before we get out of Junior, because of course he's coaching here in Saskatoon, Mitch Love.
Lover. Oh man. Yeah. He was playing in, he would have been in Everett when I was, you know, we were talking. We had plenty of scraps, and then pro, we had a few, but man, he was fearless. I don't remember how many fights. I think he had 30, 40 fights his 18, 19-year-old year.
Oh, yeah.
What an absolute legend. And look at him now. Like, he's, you know, he's with the national team. I mean, that's awesome.
Yep.
That's so good to see. It's great when you see these guys still a part of the game.
Yeah, and he's doing well here in Saskatoon. And,
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Exactly. Well, so you, so we're at a junior, and you're, you know, you're back into the, with the, back in the Blues camp, and you end up in did you start in Peoria and end up in Alaska, or start in Alaska and end up in Peoria?
I started in Peoria. I can't remember how many games it was in, but I injured my wrist, had to have surgery, and then went up there for like a conditioning stint. And I'm sure you're going to touch on it, but my conditioning stint was met with a month off of hockey because of a decision in a in a game up there, and then I ended up back in Peoria for the rest of the season.
First of all, in Peoria, we'll talk about, well, yeah. You, your teammates, you're with not only, well, DJ King, but what a team this is. Well, Reedlow, DJ yep. King, oh, and some guy named Rocky Thompson.
Oh, just some guy.
Yeah. How was Rocky?
He was so good to me, man. He as a rookie, he, I would say, was more or less one of the guys that wanted to help and took me under his wing and realized the position I was in. And, you know, him being one of the most intimidating guys in the league, it was quite easy to follow by example with what he did. And he was an absolute machine off the ice, and that was hard to keep up with because he was a freaking machine. But yeah, he scared the whole league. But he grabbed me one time and says, "Hey, Fitz, you know, we gotta do a little boxing in the locker room. You know, we gotta figure this out. You know, teach you a few things." And, you know, he was one of the few guys that said, well, I was spinning him with a fight, and he said, "Fitz, you gotta stop spinning and get planted and toss them." Anyway, he grabbed me one time and said, "Fitz, we gotta do this locker boxing." I was, all right, Rocks, whatever, you know, we'll put the gloves on, we'll throw some punches, and we'll, you know, whatever. So we're getting in, the gloves are on, and I look up, and Rock goes, "Yeah, you ready, Fitz?" I go, yeah, and bam, bam, bam. Before I even know it, my freaking tooth is flying across the room. I'm like, steam, my face is red, and my eyes are, you know, I'm tearing up. I'm like, Jesus, Brett. And now I want to get this guy, right? I'm like, I want to freaking kill Rocky. I want to get this guy. And everything I did, there was nothing I could do. He was bobbing and weaving. Like, this guy was just an absolute pro boxer, and he just, from there, you know, I knew this is the guy that I needed to follow. And, you know, I wish I would have followed him a little closer. But he, you know, he did well for himself. And now look at him. He's another guy that's successful in the game. And I think he's one of the next in line in the NHL, in that organization.
Yeah, so you're not surprised by his success as a coach?
Not at all, no. I think he's got that respect level of everyone. What he's doing is because he cares. Everything he does is because he cares. It's for a meaning, and I'm not surprised one bit that he's successful, and I think he will be in the NHL as well.
No, absolutely. I hope so. Yeah, exactly. No, I was always a big fan of Rocky and watched him here in junior, and yeah, he was awesome.
Legend over there, man. Oh, freaking legend.
Awesome. I was so mad when the Flames didn't keep him. I wanted him to be, he like slaps Oliwa around, and it's like, okay, Rocky hockey. And
yeah.
And he went down, and he had the log. Oh, the guy could have been a folk hero.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, Rocky is tremendous. Well, I know a couple of the fights you had with a former guest in the show, Pete Vandermeer, speaking of minor league legends.
God, jeez. Oh, yeah. Like, I remember the game. We were skating around, and things were starting to grow up. And he goes, I don't know if you want to do that, kid. And I'm like, all right, what are you talking about there, big boy? How are you, you know? So I poked him on the face up, and he's like, yeah, we're going yet? I'm like, yeah. And I just remember that left. Okay. And it hammered me. And then I don't know the best way to describe it, but I felt and heard every other punch. And yeah, it was a learning experience. He was nails, and he taught me a lesson as a young pro. That's for sure.
Yeah. That was a lesson learned. Well, like you said, you were injured, and you went. Well, how was going up to Alaska? What was that like?
Well, it was funny because my roommate in junior, Nate Thompson, had invited me up that summer, literally that previous summer, to spend some time up there in Alaska. So I had made some local friends, and I kind of knew the way up there in Alaska. I don't know if you've ever been, but it is a gem, and I think everybody has to at least touch there at some point in their life. It's just an outdoor wonderland. So I loved it. I mean, I'd seen this, had the summer experience of 24 hours of light. But then when you get up there in the hockey season, it's more like 22 hours of dark. So that can be very hard. You know, you drive to practice at 8 in the morning, and it's starting to light up maybe a little bit, still kind of dark. You get out from the rink at whatever, you know, 11:30, 12:30, whatever, it's already starting to get dark again. So it was it was a little depressing in that sense. But they love hockey up there, and so that made it fun. And then you go on these crazy trips down to California for like 2 weeks, and yeah, it was a good place to play. They treated their players well there too.
Well, one of the names that's there, I got to ask you at this time, he'd be the Wiley veteran, and I remember watching him growing up in the Western Hockey League, Kimby Daniels.
Oh, boy, Kimby, yeah. Yeah, the Wiley, he was still the Wiley veteran then, too. Boy, he was, what a skilled player, man.
Yeah.
He had a good attitude for, you know, where he was in his career, and, like, good player. He led our team.
Yeah, well, We got to get, like, okay, well, you can explain it, because, like I said, with the East Coast League stuff, it's with footage and stuff, it's always really hard to get at that time frame. You talked about your suspension. I know you received an attempt to injure, and it was against Bakersfield, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, what all went down there?
Well, this is a story, so put kick your feet up, I guess. But well, where do I begin? So I guess you got to kind of preface a little bit. So the Bakersfield, so the year before was the lockout, and Scotty Gomez, the mayor, the governor, the legend of Alaska, was playing for the Aces, and, you know, he didn't have to do that. Like, he did it for his hometown, you know, and he ended up getting hurt. Somebody hit him into the bench, hurt his hip, and it was the Bakersfield Condors, okay? So now they're coming back to town, and I have no fucking idea that this is happening, okay? But, you know, we're playing a game, and my buddy who I'm working with right now, Chris Beckford Sue, was the goalie, and he, you know, we were roommates and we'd have fun. And I can remember one time he kind of stuck a guy in the nuts and the guy turned around and was trying to grab him. And I said, no, no, no. And we kind of dusted that one up. And from there on, the whole weekend was a shit show. It was an absolute melee. I ended up hitting, we were playing physical and I'm on the ice. Both of me and another guy are on our knees and we're sliding. And I gave him a little extra shove. He ended up hurting, I think separating his shoulder or something. So, you know, I don't feel good about those things. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say I'm doing something great here. But this is just a build-up of everything. So this night goes on. I've had a fight. I've injured this guy. The game was really rough. So then the next night, game's going, and all these guys want a piece of me now. I injured the guy, and I'm like, yeah, this is great. You know, and I think I had one fight in this. I don't know how to explain his say his name, Kostinen, I think is...
Yeah, Kevin Kostinen or something, yeah.
I don't want to butcher it, but I don't want to disrespect him either. But he was, you know, he was being a shit, and he was skating around the game. He's a big boy, and at this point in the game, he's, you know, I'm trying to get in a fight, and you won't fight me. I'm, like, trying to get this guy to fight, and I'm, you know, I'm getting riled up, and the refs, now they bring me to the penalty box, and they put me in the penalty box, and I sit down, and I look out, and I see this guy still over at our bench. He's skating on the bench. He's poking guys with a stick, and he's, you know, he's talking shit. And I was like, all right, that's it. So I look over. There's no penalty box attendee. The door is wide open. All right, here's a good decision in my life. Let's go out to center ice and challenge this guy. So I go out there. I'm like, okay, that's enough. We're doing this. You have no choice. We're fighting. And it's a good fight. Like, it's a great fight, good scrap, and the refs come in, they grab us, and he's still fucking talking shit. He's still talking shit. So I had my arm loose, and one more punch went right over, and it wasn't a punch that, like, it wasn't a punch where you hit a punching bag and you know you've hit something. It was a punch where you, like, went through, you've hit something and went right through it where you almost feel sick. And I felt sick because I knew something was wrong. And it just kind of went through it. Hit him, I think it, as far as I know, it knocked him out, but the ref was holding onto him so tightly that when he fell, his leg was bent so wrong that the ref fell on his femur, busted it. And, like, this is not, like, I don't know what this is going on. I knew something was wrong, so I turned around and skated away right away. But as soon as that happens, the announcer goes, and that one's for Scotty. And the whole arena just blows up. And the players that are sitting out are like, wait, what? This guy, the radio guy is getting the ball. So now they're going in there threatening the radio guy. I'm down in the hallway screaming at their team. We're almost getting into fights in the locker room. Like, it's just absolute melee. But yeah, so that, long story short, that all happened. And the funniest part is you know, I'm a 20-year-old kid at this point, and I'm not, you know, I don't have an ID or anything, but we go down to F Street in Alaska, or in Anchorage, and F Street's is our spot where everybody goes, and it's usually pretty full. And you know, we walk in, and I'm trying to sneak in, stay under the radar, and all of a sudden, the microphone goes, hey, everybody, hold on, and it's Fitzgerald in the house, he's there, he does that one for Scotty, and they're just, like, freaking out, like, I have just won a WWE wrestling match, and I'm walking, I'm like putting on my hands, like, yeah, okay, all right, hey, we're good, you know, this, yeah, I'm fit, hey guys, you know, I'm, hey, you know, just kind of soaking it all in or whatever. But that was, it was quite funny, because I think somebody called me a nickname like Hammerhead or something way back then, and that didn't last, don't get me wrong, that did not last, but I think they were shouting that over the to the microphones, and but yeah, it was all fun and games until about 2 days later when I got suspended for 10 games, and my conditioning stint in Alaska basically ended up being like 4 games at the end of the day and going back to Peoria for Christmas time. But yeah, it was a story. It was a story. And one of the craziest parts too about this story is about, must have been 2 years later in Manitoba, in the middle of a game, and I got an interview in between periods, and the guy comes up to me, and this is, you know, right before the interview, and he goes, hey, yeah, hey Fitz, how you doing, man? I'm Kevin's uncle. I'm like, Kevin? Oh my, I'm so, like, I'm just like dumbfounded, like, what, this guy just dropped this huge bomb on me, that this guy that I've absolutely, like, his leg is busted, he probably didn't, I think he only played a little bit longer after that, and then he's done, and just like, oh my God, can you please pass on my apologies? Like, this is awkward. Maybe we shouldn't be talking about this in the middle of a game, but hey, you know, it was a story.
Well, yeah. Well, like you said, it, unfortunately, you know, it's one of those things, but,
yeah. What was the feel? So I know you have your, the next season, you start off in Peoria again, and then you end the season in Alaska. At this point, were you a little frustrated with the Blues organization?
Yeah, it was a frustrating season. I didn't see eye to eye with the head coach, and I don't know what it was. I don't know what his deal was. I never did anything wrong with him. But, you know, Brent Thompson was the D coach, and we got him fine. Like, he was an absolute animal when he played, and he was, you know, he liked how I played.
Well, so I was going to say, you had to be a fan of yours, yeah.
Yeah, like, we were fine, but I was, you know, I wasn't getting the opportunities I wanted, and it just didn't work out. I was just, like, it didn't work out. So I was quite happy to be traded that summer. And it's unfortunate because, you know, the St. Louis Blues organization is, you know, a prestigious one, and it is what it is. But yeah, I did not have a good season that year. That was a point where, you know, at that age, you're like, wow, this is, you know, really real here. This can happen. And yeah, it was a great relief to be traded that summer.
Well, yeah, and like you said, you kind of mentioned it earlier. So you get traded to the Canucks. So obviously, you go into camp that fall. And I mean, you know, Vigneault's the coach, and the Sedins are there, and Trevor Linden and BX. How was that all, that experience? And do you have any fights in camp? Mike Brown and them? Did you get at it with them?
I didn't. No. They didn't want any inter squad scraps. They were really big on that, and I always took that like yeah, I shouldn't do that, even though. In the past, like, yeah, but, like, that St. Louis camp, they said the same thing, but those guys were fucking going left, right, and center. But, no inter-squad scraps. But, like I said, they were so welcoming. You know, even the Sedins, you know, Luongo. Marcus Naslund actually was, you know, he played with my brother in Pittsburgh. So he remembered Rusty, and we chatted a little bit about him. And so he was really, really nice to me. My roommate for camp was, which I couldn't fathom, because you would have thought they would put a veteran like this guy, Sammy Sallow, with another veteran. But I was like, rooming up with Sammy Sallow. I'm like, what? This guy's sitting over here playing like FIFA on his iPhone, and I'm like sitting here listening to freaking underground hip hop, like freaking out because I'm sitting next to one of the best defensemen in the NHL. You know, like rooming with the guy, not even knowing what I should, like, should I be bringing this guy water? Like, what's going on here? You know.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. Well, and so you start the season with the Moose. Two guys I have to ask you about, and unfortunately, they're not here anymore. But Luke Bourdon and Rick Rippon. Do you have any stories of those guys?
Yeah, it was, you know what, that's, it's so unfortunate. It's so sad, I guess, just to think about it. Like, but yeah, no, Luke should have been, you know, we should still be watching him in the NHL, and Rick too, but, you know, like, Luke was just a great player. You know, he's a good dude. Last memory I have with him is we went to a 3 Days Grace show in the MTS Center, and we were all there with another guy, PC LeBrie, another French-Canadian guy, and we had a great time. We snuck backstage and met some of the band, and then that summer he passed, and that was really hard for the organization. Craig Heisinger and all those guys over there, they're very passionate about their players, and especially Rick Rippon. Like, he... I don't even really know where to begin, but, like, basically, my experience with Ripper, and you can attest to this too, back in the WHL, he was feared. He was a pound for pound toughest guy out there, and I never had to fight him, but I was probably assured a few times that it was a good thing, because him and his brother were absolute nails. And on top of that, absolute gem of a guy at Vancouver camp. He grabbed me. We had lunch and dinner a lot together. Really nice guy. You would have just really had no idea what was going on. You just would have never had any idea. He was that type of guy that he kept it sheltered. And I wish, you know, that we could have all done better for him, but that's something that none of us will ever understand. So it's unfortunate that he, that we're all, that they're memories for us now. But, you know, it's one great thing is the Rick Rippon story is living in Winnipeg and through their charity out there. So he'll never be forgotten. And, you know, the Heisingers and the Keane family and all those people out there in Winnipeg will never, ever forget that guy.
No, absolutely. And, what a sad story. And, and like you said, you're not the first guy that I've had on here that said the same thing with Rippon. Like, you just didn't know, right? And, you know, and it's, But, another guy that you played with was the veteran there, Mike Keane.
Oh, Mike Keane. I love that guy. He would be the first one in the locker room. He'd be sitting there with the Food Network on, and every single guy you walk by, he would chirp, "Oh, Fitz, oh, about time you showed up, fucking guy, you fucking rookie," but, you know, just whatever. He would just chirp, and, you know, he'd be on the bus, in the back of the bus, crushing chocolate, and the best shape on the team. 41 years old, like 3% body fat, machine, hardest working guy on the team. Fighting guys, I'm not sure his exact height, but he's like 5'9", 5'10", fighting guys that are like 22 years old, that are 6'5", that are like up-and-coming heavyweights in the NHL, and throwing left bombs in their face, doing everything they can that he can possibly do to win a championship for the Manitoba Moose, for Winnipeg, because that's his hometown, that's just the type of guy he is. The guy's got 3 Stanley Cups, but he's still, like, willing to throw his face and body on the line for his hometown, because that's just the type of guy he is. And I love the Keane family. They're all just amazing people. And I hope his son Jackson has a good career. He's at UND, and, you know, hopefully he can play pro. But Keener, I don't think there's a bad thing you can say about the guy.
No, absolutely. Like you said, 41 years old and, you know, riding the bus in the American League and still giving her shit. Like, that's awesome.
Oh, and you know what? He'd always be like, boys, your shoes. You gotta have nice shoes. You gotta have clean shoes. You can't, if you don't have clean shoes, you're not a man. So, like, if he, and that's not, don't quote me on that, the man part, but a few times when he was healthy scratched or not healthy scratched or injured or whatever, it scratched because of veteran status or whatever, you'd find him in the locker room fucking cleaning guys' shoes. He's just a beauty.
Well, February 5th versus the Dallas Stars. Zach Fitzgerald gets in the lineup with the Vancouver Canucks. And I hear you had an interesting story with your gear.
Yeah, so I guess we got another story, so you can get that popcorn back here. So
there you go.
Yeah, so now this is back when I was on my way back to Peoria for the first time, to play against Peoria for the first time. So in my mind, I just want to show these, prove these guys what they're missing, right? Oh, you traded me. This is what you missed, right? Oh, I'm going to be in the NHL. This is what you missed. But yeah, so we're flying down to Peoria, and Scott O'Neill is the coach with us in Manitoba, and I got a ton of respect for him. Great guy. Gave me such an opportunity to play. And, you know, we land in Chicago, and Arnie goes, Fitch, come on over here. I'm like, oh, I'm trying to rack my brain. What did we do? What did we do? You know, my roommates, what did we do? But he goes, hey, Fitch, just want you to know, we're leaving you here at the airport. You're going to fly to Dallas tomorrow, and you're going to play your first NHL game, blah, blah, blah. Just so, like, chill. I was like, oh, my, okay, wow. What, oh, thank you so much. Like, do I hug you here, or, what, you know, how, you know, and, no, so I'm just trying to contain the excitement and, you know, like, say goodbye to my teammates. They're getting on a bus down to Peoria to play in Peoria the next day, and I'm staying in Chicago overnight to fly down to play with Vancouver. So that was quite cool. No sleep at all. Get up on time, get to the airport, all my gear, everything's good to go. Get on the plane, land in Dallas. All right, cool. Everything's good. I got my backpack. I don't think I had much, like, luggage. You know, I'm sitting there waiting, and carousel's going around and around and around. I'm waiting and waiting. Everybody's gone. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to the oversized luggage. I'm going to go to oversized luggage. You know, so I go over there. There's hockey sticks. All right, got my sticks. All right. You guys got a hockey bag, too? No, sir. No. What does it look like? Well, it's a huge, huge black bag. It's got a big moose on it, blah, 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 yada, yada. No, sorry, sir, blah, blah. So I wait there for a while, and I call in all the contacts, and I'm like, hey, my gear's not here. Oh, don't worry, Fitz, just get in the car. We'll get down here. We'll take care of blah, blah, blah. So I got down to the rink. The guys had already pregame skated. They already had their pregame meal. I went and kind of got the scraps of their, you know, their steak and their lobster and all this wonderful food. No, but, yeah, I know they obviously eat well. And then I, you know, I went up to take a nap and, well, tried to nap. Couldn't even think straight, you know, and nor shut my brain down. Showed up at the rink. Hey, guys, how's it going? Some bad news. It's your gear didn't show up. All right. But this is what we've done. We put together all this gear. You know, they got Lucas Krajicek was injured, so I wore his skates and most of his gear. But they were like, I had to like, you know, rip these things with clear tape just to, I like a stiff skate. The things were bent over like, you know, broken ankles. And, but you know what, at that time, you know what, you might not ever get that opportunity again. And that's just the way I went with it. I never looked back and, you know, skating around warmups, kind of like looking up in the rafters and looking over at Modano and, you know, Turco and guys like that, and just kind of like soaking it all in and not really even realizing, you know, I was going to be playing because I was 7th E, you know, and then Mike Weaver comes over and he goes, Pitch, hey, yeah, not going to be able to go, be ready. I'm like, oh, shit. Okay, this is happening. And much love and thanks to Rick Bowness, and I wish him the best of luck with his head coaching career now, but he just kept saying my name, Fitz. Fitz, go, Fitz, you know, Luke, you know, Mac, go, Fitz, you know, Fitz. I'm like, what? Like looking up at this guy, like, are you sure? Like, you sure you're not just, you know, on, like, computer mode here? And he just kept playing me, and I think I was minus one going into the third period and ended up being on the ice for a goal, too, so I was is even at the end of the day. Triple or quadruple or whatever amount of zeros it was across the board, I tried to get try to get Steve Ott going. He was basically like, who the fuck are you? You know, like, maybe give it another few more games, kid, and we'll, you know. But that always bothered me because I just wanted to grab that guy because he's a bit of a rat. Obviously, everyone wanted to grab that guy. And then Chris Bartsch, I tried to get him going too, but it just wasn't the time, I guess. But it was unfortunate because, you know, I didn't get the chance again, but it would have been nice to just, you know, show that element of my game. And whether it had been somebody else that saw it or whatever, but you know, I didn't get that opportunity. But I got a chance to shoot on Mike or on not shoot on Mike, sorry, shoot on Turco and then slash Mr. Mike Modano in the shin pads, basically just to tell you that because he was he was who I watched growing up.
Well, yeah.
He was the North Star, and so I slashed him on the shin pad, and I hope I can talk to him someday and just say, hey, I slashed you on the shin pad on February 5th, and you probably don't remember, but I'm just telling you now that I got to play against you one day. and it was quite an experience. The best part, though, was the phone call to Mom and Dad after. My PB coach, Dave Letourneau, brought out the nice whiskey and the satellite TV. It was too short a notice for them to come down and invite them over and just laid it out for them. They had a great night. And speaking to them after was the best part.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's awesome.
All right, guys, I think we'll stop it right here. Thank you very much for tuning in to part one with Zach Fitzgerald. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Zach was a great guest, and I really enjoyed talking to him, and I hope you guys come back and check out part two, and I will be putting that out on Sunday. Definitely come back, check it out. We continue on with the remainder of his AHL career, and then of course overseas to the UK, and I know there's a lot of folks looking forward to hearing that saga. So we will see you guys here on Sunday. Thanks, everybody.